So we're done with our overall introduction to the Avodas Yom Kippurim, and now we're starting to move into the fifth parak. So I figured before we jump into the details of the Ketores, which are going to get kind of difficult, we should first have like a general overview of the Ketores. So that's what we'll try to do in one shiur tonight, and then we can dive in. I'll hope to have. I basically have the marmokomos for the next couple weeks, realistically. So I'll send them out either tonight or tomorrow, probably tomorrow, because I got to do laundry when I get home tonight. And now that's on the recording, so my dad can laugh at me tomorrow. I'm not totally sure. I have the next big sigi is going to be chafina, which is the first step of the ketores, which is the scooping of it, which is like on and off the topic of the next three dapim of the Gemara. It all kind of runs together. So I think probably the best way to prepare it is to look at the selections of the Gemara that I'll send you on the Gemara Kumbos, and then to look at the various Rishonim. I have the sheet organized like Gemara, those Rishonim on it. Probably best to just first skim the Gemara so you have a sense of like, they're basically, the Gemara is revolving around a number of questions which just get to, like, what is chafina? Is it an avoda? Do you need an action? Is it just passive? And then the Rishonim are going to be kind of dealing with each one of these. Why are these questions individually necessary? Doesn't one question answer the other? So it's helpful to have a sense of everything, and it's hard, but we'll try to get through it together. The first half of the sigi will be easier to do, because first we'll look at the Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi is kind of a more organized shita, which the Bavli seems to probably not agree with, as we'll see. So the Yerushalmi, I think, we'll have an easier time with, ironically. The Bavli is where we'll have to work a little bit, but God willing, it should be good. so we start with the Ketores. We really have to start with the details of the Torah Shebichsav, because the Ketores plays a large role in the Avoda, and looking at the Pesukim, we see that it really plays a significantly large role. I just said to look at the first 13 Pesukim for tonight, because after the 13 Pesukim, the Chumash moves on to the other Avodos of the day. But you see that of the various elements of the Avoda, right, so we started off the year by kind of stratifying the Avodah Yom Kippur into the different circles, right? And we had the core, which was the service done with the Big Day Lavan, and that was the Ketores, right? That was the bull and the goat that were sprinkled inside the Kodesh HaKadashim, and that was the dismissal of the Seir Lazaza, right? But basically, it's the Avodah's Big Day Lavan is what's the core of the Avodah. And from the Pesukim, it seems like the core of the Big Day Lavan Avoda is the Ketores. You kind of smell that out from a number of comments that the Mefarshim make on the Pesukim, but really just from the Pesukim themselves. Right? Number one is the very context of this whole Parsha of Achrimos. Right? What's first Pasuk tells us, where is this whole Avoda coming from? Exactly, right? This is right after the deaths of Nadav Ve'avihu, right? And they died doing what? Right, they died bringing the Torah. So the segue to the whole of Avodah Yom Kippur is the fact that Nadav and Avihu died because they brought this in an improper way, right? So that kind of, we have Ketores at the front of our minds when the whole of Avodah Yom Kippur is first introduced, right? Ibn Ezra and Ramban kind of take this in two different directions, but both of them serve our purposes, right? Ibn Ezra says, Nadav, and this is an interesting machlokas, what did Nadav and Avihu do exactly? Where did Nadav and Avihu bring their ketores? So it's not really clear in the Pesukim and Shemini, right? There are two basic options. One option is that Nadav and Avihu brought their pans of ketores to the regular Mizbeach HaZahav, right? Like is done every day. Other option would be into Kodesh HaKadashim, right? Maybe Nadav and Avihu brought it into the Kodesh HaKadashim. Ibn Ezra says that's exactly what the problem was, right? That's what Nadav and Avihu did, and then they died. Right, so now these psukim are coming to tell us what is the proper protocol. When can you bring the ketores into the kodesh hakodashim? Right, and Ramban argues. Ramban says he doesn't think that that this is what happens. He says, number one, if the problem with Nadav and Avihu is that they brought the ketores where it didn't belong, right? The where is not what the psukim and shmini focused on. Right, the psukim and shmini focused on. On Eshzar, right? They focus on the what, right? That it wasn't. Or same thing, right? That they brought something they weren't supposed to bring, not that they brought it to the wrong place. That's question. That's question one that the Ramban asks on Ibn Ezra. Ramban asks a second question, which is really interesting because you can give a really good answer to it. Which is Ramban asks, how can you tell me that Nadav and Avihu brought their ketores into the Kodesh HaKadashim? After all, Aaron's not allowed into the Kodesh HaKadashim, right? We saw the Vilna Gaon's analysis last week that the whole purpose of Avodas Yom Kippurim, right, the original service of Aaron was that these are the protocols in which Aaron can go into Kodesh HaKadashim year-round, right? So before Parak Tazayin of Vayikra is commanded, right, Aaron can't go into the Kodesh HaKadashim at all. So asks Ramban, if Aaron couldn't go into the Kodesh HaKadashim, then what would have made Nadav and Avihu even dream that they could go into Kodesh HaKadashim, right? That's like a step too far as a Havamina, right? We have to figure out why were they bringing unlicensed Ketores in the first place. That's strange enough. But to imagine that they would bring it to a place where Aaron couldn't go, so that's like that's a step too far. So for that, I think you can actually give a very strong answer, which is, right, when Chazal talk about what Nadav and Avihu did wrong, so they emphasize Nadav and Avihu waiting, right, when will these two old people die so that you and I can take over the nation, right? Nadav and Avihu, the answer to Ramban's question, how can Nadav and Avihu see themselves as superior to Aaron HaKohen, is... Yeah, exactly, right? They did see themselves as superior to Aaron. They think that they're the ones who should be taking over, and they're ready to go. That's why they're bringing this Ketores in the first place, right? That's why they're taking an uncommanded initiative. So you could give that answer to Ramban's question on Ibn Ezra. But anyway, so Ramban's own answer, what's the connection between Nadav and Avihu and Yom Kippur? Right, so he says that this is to tell you that the Ketores should not be thought of only as an agent of death, right? But Ketores can also be the ultimate agent of life because it's the focal point of the Yom Kippur Avod, right? So it's not that the Nadav and Avihu brought the Ketores into Kodesh HaKadashim, they died. So now let me tell you how you can go into Kodesh HaKadashim. Rather, don't think that Ketores is an agent of death. Rather, Ketores is an agent of life. But either way, either if we take Ibn Ezra or if we take Ramban, right, we're both saying that the whole parsha of Achrimos, the first parak, is being launched by, right, a focus on the Ketores and giving us a certain message that we need to have, right? So Ketores is certainly being emphasized out of everything else in the parsha. Hamak Dabra, I think, also agreed with the Ibn Ezra, right? He's actually interesting. No, Hamak Dabra is actually a combination. Hamak Dabra, I think, is a combination of the Ramban and the Ibn Ezra. He says the Kohen Gadol better be careful in the Kodesh HaKadashim with the Ketores because Nadav and Avihu were not careful in the Kodesh HaKadashim with the Ketores, which makes it sound like a kind of a combination of the two, right? The lesson is that we should think of the Ketores as something to treat carefully, especially when you're in the Kodesh HaKadashim. Okay, so either one of those three, we're really pounding Ketores as a standout feature of the Avodah. Okay, that's kind of the takeaway from Pasuk 1. Pasuk Beis, let's see. Okay, so Pasuk Beis has a cryptic line, and this becomes a titanic machlokas between the Tzukim and the Prushim. Right, Pasuk Beis and Achim Os, V'yom Radonai Moshe, Dabei Al Aron Achicha, V'al Yavo B'choleis El HaKodesh, right, so Hashem says to Moshe, tell your brother Aaron, al yavo b'choleis al hakodesh. Right, you may not enter the kodesh at any time. This is part of what the Vilna Gaon focused on last week, right? That the focus of the Pshuto Shel Mikra seems to be on when can he enter the kodesh hakodashim, right? That the whole focus of the Avoda as originally commanded is to get Aaron HaKohen into that room. V'lo yemus, and he shall not die, which is a phrase which comes up over and over again in these few psukim. And then this last line is totally vague. Ki ba'anan ira'a al hakapores, right? Since, for in a cloud, I will appear on top of the kapores, right, over the Aron Kodesh. So he shouldn't go in at any time. And therefore, he, by doing so, he shall not die, because I will appear in a cloud. So what does that mean? What cloud are we talking about, and what does a cloud have to do with Aron Kohen? What is that? It's totally not clear. So we have two basic options. One is you could say that the Anan is the Anan of Hashem, right? And you could say that Aron HaKohen can't go in because he's going to go in, he's going to see the cloud, and that'll be it, right? So that's why he shouldn't go. The question, though, is that if the presence of Hashem is fatal, so how can he go in even on Yom Kippur, right? So that's a little bit difficult to say because, you know, if that's the problem, then the cure doesn't seem to make much of any sense, right? So the so if you look at Rashi, Rashi gives you two interpretations. One the pshat, and one is what Chazal say, right? The pshat is ki tamid ani ner Hashem al amud anani ufisha golay shchinas yisham yizer shal yargalav, right? So that's the first thing we're saying, right? Straightforward way to interpret the pasuk is that it means don't go in because you're going to see the cloud of God and that will be fatal. You see sort of the sensitivity to the problem, because how does Rashi phrase Aaron not going in? He doesn't say, he says Yargil, right? Meaning what?
Got a custom of hearing there, like willy-nilly.
Yeah, exactly, right? So he shouldn't go, so draw that out. So what is that? So does that tell you that the presence of God is automatically fatal?
No, it depends. No. It's just that the presence of God is something that you should be wary of and aware of.
Right, and take extremely seriously, right? So, you know, which would, again, right, if you take the Vilna Gaon's interpretation that the Avoda is the whole protocol to go through to allow 24/7 access to Kodesh HaKadoshim, right? So that could work, right? Because if the whole purpose of the Avoda is to get you in the proper state of mind to see the Shekhinah, right, to appear before the Shekhinah, then we could begin to understand what's going on. Okay, Pshatu the Rashi says, Midrasho, Lo yavo ki im ba'anan hakatores biyom hakipurim, right? God. So that means the cloud refers to the cloud of the Ketores, right? And so what the pasuk means is that Hashem will appear in the cloud, right? When the cloud of the Ketores shows up, ki ba'anan era'eh, right? When the cloud comes, then I'm going to appear. So the tzedukim and the prushim had a massive debate regarding when you should light the Ketores. Right? Does anybody know who held what?
Yes.
Two options. Tzedukim said you light it outside, right? And then you come in with your already lit, your already burning pan of Ketores, right? And the Purushim said?
Do
the whole thing inside, right? So you walk in with your, this is what we'll talk about coming up in the Gemara, right? But you walk in with your fire pan and your incense, right? And you somehow have to get the incense into the fire pan only after you enter the Kodesh HaKadosh. So one reason why the Tzedukim thought what they thought was because they understood the Pasuk, Ki Ba'anan Era, I mean, this is what they drash in, Ki Ba'anan Era La Kaparas, they understand means that I have to have a cloud of smoke with me as soon as I enter the Kodesh HaKadosh, right? It has to be there from the get-go. Which does make sense. The only problem, I mean, Refersh points out, the only problem is, and Chazal pointed out too, but at some point maybe we'll go through the Gemara and see like how they make fun of them in the Gemara. But if you look at Pasuk Yud Gimel, Pasuk Yud Gimel kind of explicitly contradicts the Tzduki approach, right? Pasuk says, "Vanasana sakatoras ala eish lifnei Hashem," right? He shall place the incense on the fire in front of God, right? So Chazal said that obviously refers to You clearly put the Ketores on the fire inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And then what they darshan to explain Ki Ba'anan Ner Al HaKapores means that you must put in the ingredient known as Mala Asham, right? The smoke raising herb as translated in the Sidurim. which is also something we'll have to get back to. The smoke raising herb, that's really important. Okay, you rush bomb. What's that?
From the rest of the paroches?
From the rest of the what?
The paroches.
Of the paroches?
The paroches.
The kaporis is the cover of the aron.
Yeah, yeah. If it's separate from the rest of the ketores.
The cap happens to be.
The heads and nowhere.
Yeah, okay, so if we, this is, yeah, what, so what exactly is in the Ketores? So we think back to the part of davening nobody says, the end of davening, right, after Enkel Kenu. So, Peter Ketores, right. Kaddish, okay. What? Yeah, bingo, exactly. This little kid, why is he actually saying this stuff? He didn't get the memo, I mean, come on, you know, I'm like 7 years old, you should know we skipped the davening, right? So the Ketores is made up of the 11 spices, right? Well, I don't translate all those things. And then you have 1, 2, 3, 4. 3 or 4 other ingredients that are there to make it burn effectively, right? We have yin karshinim, melach sedomis, right? Which are there to make things become... I can't smell, so I don't understand what this is, but right, some of these ingredients have to be are more pungent when soaked in a certain thing. And then mala ashan, right, is also thrown in that brisa, and that's there so that the smoke, instead of like just kind of billowing off to the sides or whatever, you have a nice straight, solid pillar of smoke. So that's the mala ashan.
Does that mean that it gets thrown in a separate time, or that it's just mixed in initially with the entire
mix? I think it was in one, exactly. It was mixed in with the whole mixture. Yeah. Yeah. The Chazal said there's one family that were the experts in making the mala ashan, and they wouldn't share their secrets with anybody, and they explained that they knew that the base mixture was going to be destroyed, so they didn't want their secrets to be end up used in whatever pagan temple where incense service would continue to be used. So, they also got paid double because they kind of went on strike. But yeah, so that's Mala Ashan. Chazal say it's required, and the Tsukub said it wasn't. Okay. Any other notes I just wanted to hit on from the Pesukim? Okay, we should probably do this together. It'll be helpful for next week also. Just to zero in on the couple of Pesukim where the Ketores is actually legislated. Right, so it starts in Pasuk Yud Beis. We start with Pasuk Yud Aleph, actually, because Pasuk Yud Aleph, two Pasuk Yud Beis, right, if you guys were able to see the Sfarno points out something that's kind of strange, but I think is important, hashgaphically, about the Avodah of the Yom Kippur. Pasuk Yud Aleph tells us that Aaron takes his own bull, right, that's one of the two karbanos which goes inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, right, Aaron's bull and the goat of the people. So Aaron says a vidui on his bull, and then he slaughters his bull. And then what does he do? After he slaughters his bull? Right. So he just slaughtered a bull, right? So whenever you do shechita, so what's the next step of the avodah? Kabbalah, right? You have to catch the blood, which is the life force of the animal. So presumably he shechts his animal, he catches the blood, and then what does he do after that? Yeah, right. He gives it to some to the intern Cohen, right, to stir, and then he runs off and goes and does his Ketores, which doesn't happen ever with any other avoda all every day of the year, right? Normally you shecht, you catch the blood, and then you walk over to the mizbech and you sprinkle it, right? For some reason here, there's this radical interruption, right? So like you could so. Why is that happening? So Sfarno says that, and I'm just drawing this out from him a little bit, but that I understand why you would be in such a rush to have the Ketores, right? Because the whole point of the Avodas Yom Kippurim is to be lefnai v'lefnim and to be exposed to the Shechina, right? And that's what Ketores is all about. But you can't do that until you've said vidoy and cleansed yourself, right? You need the Koach HaTshuva in order to go lefnai v'lefnim, right? So we are anxious to get to the Ketores, but before doing that, we have to have the vidui and begin the process of the par, right? But and vidui involves smicha, and smicha has to be connected to shechita, right? Probably because you're supposed to imagine yourself as you as the animal is being shechted. But so then, as soon as that is done, right? As soon as the smicha vidui aspect of the carbon is over, right? The Kohen Gadol's had his moment of tshuva. So now, bang! Right away, he's able to go in, and as soon as he's able to go in, he takes advantage of the opportunity and he runs straight into the Kodesh HaKadoshim with his ketores, leaving the intern to stir the blood of his par so that it does not congeal. Okay. Yeah, just a couple of other things, right? So the pasuk says v'kach melo machta gach liyesh, right? So the Kohen Gadol himself has to take coals. So where does he get those coals from, right? Which are going to ignite the ketores. So he gets those coals from the mizbeach. Which mizbeach? You know, mizbeach achitzon. He walks up to the big altar. He takes some glowing embers, right? Those go in one pan. And that's what he holds in one hand, and then he does what? Meloch hafnav, ketores anim daka. Then he takes two hands full of the ketores, the hevi mibeis laperochas, right? And then he brings those two with him inside the kodesh hakadashim. Yeah. Now you'll notice, and this will be important for next week, so we won't dwell on it, but just to point out that the way the pasuk formulates the scooping is important, because does the pasuk say the chafan melo chafnav gitar samim? No, right? It says he takes the coals and two hands full, right? So there is no active verb immediately connected to melo chafnav. So the question for next week is going to be, does he really need to be, how significant is the act of scooping? So that's kind of a problem which comes out of the Pasuk. Discrepancy between Ketores of the rest of the year, Ketores of Yom Kippur. So Ketores of the rest of the year is a half mana in the morning and a half mana in the evening. For this Ketores, there's this unique shear of two hands full of the Kohen Gadol. Now, if you have a big Kohen Gadol, or if you have a small Kohen Gadol, so what do we do? We'll have a different shear every year, right? So the hand size of the Kohen Gadol determines the Ketores for that year, which, right, if Yom Kippur is like the day of the Kohen Gadol, and the Ketores is the central avodah of Yom Kippur, then, right, it's interesting that the shear of Ketores is, this one time a year, very closely connected to the Kohen Gadol himself. Okay. And finally, last pasuk, unasan is a Ketores al ha'esh lefnei Hashem. Right, we said that's where Chazal point out to the Stukim that the Torah explicitly says that he's supposed to light the Ketores inside the Kodesh HaKadashim. V'chisa anan ha'ketores, right, so when we said earlier in the parsha, right, ki be'anan era al ha'kaparas, and we said it refers to the cloud of the Ketores, so that's not coming at random, right, because here we have the cloud referred to Pasuk Yigimah, right, v'chisa anan ha'ketores, es ha'kaparas asher ha'idos v'lo yimus, right, the cloud shall cover the Kapores, and Aaron shall not die if he does this. If he does this properly, okay. Lo yamus is mentioned three times in this context, and once later on, right? Avodas Yom Kippur is kind of all or nothing, right? You do it right, and then there's kapara. You do it wrong, and there's catastrophe. When you're going in lefnai lefnim, it has to be done seriously. As Leo was talking before, shlo yargal b'kach. Okay. So let's shift gears now. We can get into. Yeah.
Are we talking? I mean, clearly we're only talking about like on the way into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but when the Kohen Gadol has to go back in to get like the pan.
Yeah.
So, I guess are we going to talk about that at all? Like, because like we're talking about all this preparation and has to go into like entering the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and I guess like maybe that also counts for like, when he goes back in to take the pan out. But like, it's kind of strange that there isn't preparation
for
that one also, right?
I'm not sure I follow.
Like, we're talking about like the Ketoret being like the height of the Avodah, and like sort of not just the Ketoret, but the going into going into the Kodesh HaKodashim where Hashem is going to appear, and then I guess, like, I haven't read over the second, like, when he goes back in, or the Mishnah when he goes back in, but, like, do we have that same sort of, like, treatment of, like, this is still, like, the pinnacle, like, going into the Kodesh HaKodashim? Because we have that sort of, like, this is, like, the height of the Yom Kippur service when he goes into the Kodesh HaKodashim with the Ketoret, but then to take it out, if it's treated a little bit more, like, blasé, like, are we just going to, like, recover the stuff that he put in beforehand?
I've always thought that was a little bit funny. That, like, you kind of end on a bit of a...
Yeah.
But, I mean, let's set aside the going back in to get the set aside the Kohen Gadol goes in three times, right? First time he goes in to burn the Ketores. Second time he goes in to sprinkle the blood, right? And the third time he goes in to get his stuff back. So, not knowing anything, I would have bet which one of those three, I mean, I don't know, maybe three. Which one of those three would you bet is the would be the main one? Not. I would guess the blood, right? It's Yom Kippur, Yom Kippurim, right? And the blood is the Mechaper. So I would have bet that the focus really would be on number two, right? So what to say about that? And I don't want to, like, totally tip the hand, but the one is an act of kapara, and one is an act of focused on being in front of God. Which one is the real focus of Yom Kippur? So, yeah, but that's kind of drifting into ruining the Rav's article. But so we're going to get there before 9:30. Okay. So that, any other points on the Torah Shavasav before we move into the world of Torah Shavapeh, i.e., the world of the briskers? Okay, great. So the next, like, basic thing you want to do, right, if we're kind of taking a basic overview introduction to the Ketores for Yom Kippur, is we'd want to have some basic handle on the Ketores for the rest of the year, right, so we could have, like, a basic working comparison contrast between the Ketores of the year and the Ketores of Yom Kippur, right? The odds are that would be instructive for us to understand what's going on here. So... it's not often that your first source for, like, a basic definition of a concept is the Griz, but it happens to be true here. There's a passage in Kiddushin Ran Riz Halevi, Al Harambam, page Lama Gimel, which is, like, essential for understanding the mitzvah of Ketores during the year. Were people able to access it? Okay, so does anyone remember what his basic question was to start off? The Tamid and the Ketores.
How communal is the nature of it?
Bingo. Right, that if you read the Rambam carefully, the Ketores is formulated differently from the Tamid, which is surprising because you think that these are part of the same basic maharachet, right, which is there's the daily service, right? Part of the avodah is the daily mikdash service, right? We have to have the two tzmidin, we have to have the menorah, we have to have the ketores, we have the constant bread on the shulchan, right? Basically, every keli in the mishkan has to get its daily work. So you'd think that, right? Ketores is once in the morning, once at night. Tamid is once in the morning, once at night, afternoon. So you think that those would be formulated the exact same way, but they're not, right? How does the Rambam differ in the two? Do you remember? Excellent, right? Because for the Tzmidin, the formulation is Shetziva Hakonim Lahaktir. Sorry, the Ketores formulation was Shetziva Hakonim Lahaktir Ketores B'chol Yom. Right, that Hashem commanded the priests to burn the incense twice every day, right? And then for the Tamid, like 11 mitzvahs later, he says, Shasivanu l'hakriv b'mikta shnei kvasim, right? That he commanded us to bring two shapsels, right? So why is one formulation referring to we being commanded and one referring to the Kohanim being commanded, right? Had they both said the Kohanim, we could have said, okay, right? Or had they both said B'nai Yisrael. Let's say they both said B'nai Yisrael. So B'nai Yisrael, don't bring the Tamid, right? So how do we explain, how is it a mitzvah which is incumbent on Kol Yisrael if the priests are the ones who do it? Those, right, exactly. And whose representatives are they, right? They work on our behalf, right? And there's a whole sugya, our kanyan, shluchei didan, or shluchei rachmana, right? Are they characterized as our agents or God's agents? But on some level, right, the kanyan are doing the avoda on behalf of Klal Yisrael, right? Who gets the kapara, right? Aaron Cohen does all the avoda in Yom Kippur, right? But who gets the kapara from Aaron Cohen's avoda? The whole nation, right? So I wouldn't be surprised to see Yisrael, even though the Kohanim are doing it, but I am surprised to see this contrast between the Kohanim and Yisrael, Kohanim for Ketores and Yisrael for Tamid, right? And the Grizz points out, it's not like the Rama made this up, right? If you look at the Psukim, that distinction really comes out of the Psukim as well, right? So what to do to explain this? So he says, you have to understand that there's a basic difference between Ketores and Tamid. Namely, the tamid is a carbon, right? It's a carbon. There's kapara, right? It's being brought to achieve a certain purpose, and it's being brought on behalf of the tzibur and by the tzibur, right? And that's like every carbon tzibur works, right? The musaf on Shabbos and Yom Tov, right? The tamid, they're being brought by it's a carbon. It's brought, you know, for whatever purpose karbanos are brought. But there's like a kiyum of offering a sacrifice, right? And if you offer it with the wrong intentions, it's going to be pasal, right? And if you offer it with thoughts of eating it at the wrong time or burning it at the wrong time or place, right? So that's pigle, and that's also going to be a problem. That's the world of the carbon. For the ketores, though, he says, it's not that you're bringing a carbon. It's not that the priests are offering a carbon on our behalf, and that the act of offering is tied into a larger idea of bringing a carbon, right? By the tamid, so the mitzvah is not to slaughter and sprinkle the tamid. The mitzvah is to offer the tamid, right? And that includes the actions of sprinkling and slaughter, right? But there's like a greater purpose being accomplished when bringing a tamid, just like there's a greater purpose being accomplished by offering any carbon. He says, Ketores, that doesn't seem to be the case. Ketores, the mitzvah is the simple, raw act of burning. Mitzvah is not to offer Ketores. Mitzvah is to burn Ketores once in the morning and once in the afternoon. And since the mitzvah is focused on the physical action, right, rather than on the broader concept of offering, so if I have a mitzvah which is really a raw physical action, so it's not relevant to talk about serving as someone's shliach in that case. Right, the priests are the one, the kohanim are the ones who are supposed to burn the ketores on the mizbeach. Right, that's not shayach for anybody else, for any of us. So that's like a fundamental difference there. Right, one, the act is the raw act of burning. The mitzvah ketores is to burn ketores, and for karbanos, the mitzvah is to offer a karban. You see the difference expressed in one way because are we focusing on that Sibur bringing it, or are we focusing on the Kohanim burning it? Number two, in terms of what the real Maisa Mitzvah is. And number three, right, is he quotes his father, right? Adoni Avi Mori V'Rabi, Hagon HaChasid, Zecher Tzadek V'Kadosh, etc., etc., right? So who's he referring to? This one. Ron Rizzoli quotes his father. Yeah, okay, it's good. So now we need a family tree because it's actually going to come up. Bingo.
Okay, good. Yeah, so.
Oh,
man, yeah, that's right.
And the nephew. Base Levy, you know Base Levy's name? No, it's Yosef.
Bingo. Yeah, exactly.
No, it's the Ron's great grandfather, yeah. Third down generation.
Okay, and then the graph, and then Rav Moshe, Ram, Chris Levy, Grizz, and Rav Yosef, Dov, the second. Okay. Yeah. Name them. Okay. One, two, three, four generations. Okay, and I think out of those, we'll quote except for 10, which is good. So he quotes Rav Chaim. Talking about if you have ketores that's offered shelo lishma, right? You know, when we talk about a carbon being offered shelo lishma, So that means it's being offered as if it was something else, right? So, for example, if you bring a chatas and have in mind that it's an ola, so that's shelo lishma. If you bring an ola but you have in mind that it's not a carbon at all, it's just a regular animal, so that's maybe shelo lishma. But that's what we're talking about. You're kind of bringing category X, and you're having in mind category Y, right? So I'm not sure what, so you offer ketores, and you have in mind, this is oil or something. I don't know. I don't know what exactly you'd be having in mind. You're having not ketores in mind when you're offering the ketores. So in karbanos, this is the first mission in Zvachim, halacha is that karbanos break into two different categories if you offer it with the wrong intentions. Category one is disqualified. Category two is you continue with the service, but you have to bring a different one because you haven't fulfilled your obligation, right? Chatas and Karban Pesach are disqualified with improper thoughts. Everything else, we say kasher v'lo alu l'bayim l'shem chova, they're still brought, but you have to bring something else, right? So if you promise to bring an ola, and the Kohen has the wrong intentions, then you have to go and bring another ola. What happens if you bring ketores shelo lishma? Which category is it? Is it pasul or is it kasher v'lo alu l'bayim? Asks Rav Chaya. Neither, right? It's a trick question. Yeah, what does he say it is? It's totally fine, right? It's you go ahead and you bring it, and there's absolutely, you haven't done anything. I don't know if you haven't done anything wrong, but you have fulfilled your obligation of the ketores, even if you had improper thoughts. How is that possible? There's no such karban which can be offered with improper thoughts, and you fulfilled your obligation. So how can that be the case here? It's not a karban. What's the mitzvah of bringing it? To bring it, right? The mitzvah is just to burn it, right? There's no broader, deeper kiyum, right? The action of burning is the kiyum for ketores. So therefore, it's incumbent on the kohanim. That's what how we'll define the mitzvah, and that is why, argues Rav Chaim, you still fulfilled your obligation if you even had the improper thoughts, right? Because what can improper thoughts do to limit my act of burning? So now, a question is, does this model of ketores, right, as being brought... Do you want to ask instead?
Ask. What? From what we're saying right now, are we considering the ketores in the scared of a korban? Or we call it as something different?
No, I think we still say it's in the Mizgarto carbon. I think it's still fair. But the question is, the mitzvah of bringing it is simply the burning rather than the what we call bringing. Exactly. Okay. So that's a ketores of all year round. What about ketores of Yom Kippur? Could we fit that framework to the ketores of Yom Kippur? So I gave you two things to look at in that group. One was a Rambam, one was a Gemara, which both militate in the answer of no, right? So you guys want to speak? Come out. Good. Yeah. Exactly. Right. What was this Rambam will feature in coming attractions Rambam, right? Because Rambam says Parakei Lecha Chavzayin, Chafina Sakatoras, right? The scooping of the Ketores is an avoda. Keep that in mind. Rambam rules that chafina is an avoda, so just have that awareness there. And what are the next two words? Or three words? Machshava posalet, right? Improper thoughts. He doesn't specify which ones. It sounds like all of them, right? Machshava posalet, improper thoughts ruin the ketores. Okay, so what are we going to do? Rav Chaim saying that machshava is not posalet, and Rambam saying it is, so how are we going to answer that one? Yeah, where is this Rambam? Mm-hmm. Exactly, right? The regular laws of Ketores are in Hilchot Tmidin U'Musafin, right? That's what bothered the Griz, is that Ketores is part of the Tamid Mizgaret, right? But here we're talking only in Avodas Yom Kippurim, talking about the Ketores of Yom Kippur. Here, all of a sudden, Machshava is a problem. Okay, and then I also gave the Gemara on Memdalid, right, where the Gemara talks about which part of the Yom Kippur service gives Kapara to everybody. Right, because the Kohen Gadol brings two animals. One is kapara for the Kohanim, right, and one is kapara for the Yisraelim, right. So, what's the one which has kapara for all peoples? And answers the Gemara, oh, it's the Ketores. Right? That's, I think, on Mem Dalet Amidala. Yeah, right? And then we're told, what does the Ketores atone for? Lashon Hara, right? Why does it atone for Lashon Hara? There's a parallel between the Ketores and Lashon Hara. The secret, right? Because let that which is offered in secret atone for that which is done usually in secret.
Why the Lashon
Hara? Yeah, we could, exactly.
No, I thought it was like the Ketores usually done in secret.
So that's a bit of a thing I was wondering about, which is how the right, Reb Chaim is going to have to say that this Gemara is only talking about the Ketores of Yom Kippur. So where is he going to get that from? So the Gemara quotes a pasuk. Right, the Gemara actually asks, like, how do we know that Ketores is machaper? Because Ketores does not seem to have any atonement, and the Gemara quotes a pasuk. This is when in the Korach story, right? So, right where the Malachim Aves is on the loose, right? And the plague is going around. So Aaron runs out with Ketores, and he atones for the people. So there you have explicitly, right? And Aaron atones for the people. So you see that Ketores can have kapara. Now, it's a bit of a problem, right? Just to take a step away from our dichotomy of Ketores during the year versus Ketores of Yom Kippur, right? If we're going to say that, oh, it's only Ketores of the year of Yom Kippur, which has a greater element to it, well, the Gemara, the source that the Gemara is using, right, is not Ketores of Yom Kippur. So, but we could also say, yeah, well, it's also not Ketores of the whole year, right? You know, as we could say, yeah, the standard Ketores, so the standard Ketores is what Reb Chaim was talking about when he said that the mitzvah is just the raw burning, right? When what the Gemara is trying to do here is show that Ketores has the potential to be Mechaper, right? And so we'll say that what is true of the unique Ketores of Aaron, right, which is like only brought once, is also true of the unique Ketores of Yom Kippur, I guess is what you have to say. Okay, so that's that, right? So Ketores of the year is really focused on the Maisa and nothing more. We've seen that the Ketores of Yom Kippur, that does not seem to be the case. And now we'll spend the rest of the time kind of exploring what exactly it is about. Right? If it's not about the raw Maisa, so then you'd want to know how far away from the Maisa is it. Right? How the Kiyum of Ketores of Yom Kippur, how far away do we go from saying we focus on the burning itself? What is it actually all about? Okay, so for this, most of this stuff, this is going to be kind of a theme, which is going to, we'll see other points that prove it as we go on in the Limud. So we won't cover all of them now, but we'll see the ones that the Rav quotes in this article. Leora might remember this because we did a long article from this book in Sanhedrin. This book, Kobe's Chidushei Torah, Hagram Ve'agrid Halevi Salavichuk, is where they had that whole article about the Sanhedrin. The force of democratic representation versus the judicial right, those two roles that Sanhedrin plays. So that whole article wasn't here. The judiciary and the legislature. So this book is a few articles from Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, which were published in his lifetime, and then a bunch of articles that were published by the Rav in his lifetime. And since nobody has these random rabbinic journals that were published in 1934, they collected these back in the 80s, and they put together this book, which is a great, great resource. They put in a nice little index, so you can even use it without just looking at the titles. So the Rav here has a 2.5-page article on titled "Binin Hishtachava LeKohen Hagadol B'Yom HaKippur," right, on the topic of the bowing of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, which is totally a bit of a misnomer of a title because it's. Bowing is really one nafkamina of a broader theme which he develops partially in this article and partially in some other things that we'll see over the course of the year, and we'll throw in some of our own suggestions to kind of boost it. So let's go. Did guys have a chance to see it or no?
Part of it.
Okay. Good. So I'll direct more. So the Rebbe starts off with a basic question, right? And with all really excellent insights, right, they all usually can start with a basic question. If you look in the Mishnayot in the sixth chapter of Masechet Tamid, so those Mishnayot talk about the Kohanim going into the Heichal to do the daily service done inside the Heichal, right? What's done in the Heichal? So you have to have someone go in to clean out the menorah, and someone's going to set up the menorah, and someone has to bring in the coals for the ketores, and someone has to light the ketores, right? That has to happen every day, right? Every single time, the Mishnah has a pattern. Person goes into the Heichal, he does his job, he bows down, and then he walks out, right? Which makes sense, right? We have some intuitive understanding of why every time someone goes into the Heichal, he should bow down, right? That kind of seems appropriate. Not only does it seem appropriate, but there's actually an interesting halacha to know about, which is you're not allowed to go into the Heichal for no purpose. That's called bia rekanes, and it's a lav, right? You're only allowed to walk into the Heichal if you're going to do something. So let's say for whatever reason, a Kohen walked into the Heichal. You know, he got lost, and he finds himself in the Heichal, and now he's stuck. So he doesn't have any avoda to do. So what can he do? So is very good, right? He can bow down, right? And the idea is that you have to go into the Heichal with some worshiping purpose, and bowing down fits the bill, right? So you can bow, and that makes this considered a purposeful approaching. It is not a bia rekanes. Okay, so the Mishnayot say that every time every Mishnah referring to the Kohanim going into the Heichal to do their daily service says that they are bowing down at the end. Okay, so now the Rav asks a really basic question, right? Any Sherlock Holmes fans here? Any chance? No.
Jacket.
Yes.
Okay. Well, this is also a book, like 10 years ago or so. But the case of the dog that didn't bark. You remember the concept of the dog that didn't bark? The curious incident. Exactly. Okay.
Oh,
so the curious incident. Yeah, the curious incident of the dog in the nighttime.
Are you talking about that book?
So the book. Yeah. So the book comes from a Sherlock Holmes story, which I forget the boy's name, but the boy knows that. So this is like, it's a good concept to have, helpful learning. There are a few Sherlock Holmes concepts which are helpful learning, but one is, so it's the story, there's a prize racehorse, and the prize racehorse has disappeared right before some big race, which was going to win the owner a lot of money. So they bring Sherlock Holmes in to figure out who could have possibly stolen the horse. What one thing that Holmes notices is that even though there were watchdogs in the stable, the stable was quiet the night that the horse left, right? Which means that the watchdogs were totally fine. So that means that the thief was somebody who the watchdogs knew. So it means it was someone who belongs in the stable. So that's how he figures out that it was the trainer who was the one who stole the horse. Right? That's the short version of the story. Totally. Yeah, especially because the trainer also was killed. Yeah, anyway.
Did
you get
the horse back?
I can't totally spoil it. So the blundering fool of a policeman, you know, asks Holmes, you know, give me a hint, right? And so he says to him, you know, you should pay attention to the curious incident of the dog in the nighttime, right? And the policeman says well, the dog did nothing in the nighttime, right? So he says, well, that's the curious incident, right? So the dog that didn't bark. So the dog that didn't bark can be, right, when you should see something and you don't, so that can be a major issue. So the Rav says, I'm the Rav, and I went through all of Masechet Yuma, and all of the Rambams, and all the Mishnah, and all the Gemaras, and all the Toseftas, and Tarkonim, and Rishon Rachon, whatever. Nobody ever mentions the Kohen Gadol doing one thing every time he goes into the Kodesh or Kodesh or Kodesh. Never mention him bowing. Never shows up. Right? Tamid, the Mishnah and Tamid were saying over and over and over again, this Kohen goes in, he does his avoda, he bows. That Kohen goes in, he does avoda, he bows. Ah, blah, blah, does avoda, menorah, bow. Ketores, bow. Coals, bow. Kohen Gadol goes in three different times into the Kodesh HaKadashim, and we never have any mentioning, oh, and he bows down. So, why is that? right? It's doubtful. It's just like an oversight, right? There should be some evidence for it. Bavli, Yerushalmi, Sifra, nothing. So why is the Kohen Gadol not bowing down when he goes into Kodesh HaKadoshim? Every other Kohen bows down every time he goes into the Kodesh, right? That seems significant. So, with then give a couple other cases and then give the answer. We'll give the answer and we'll give the other cases at Nafka Mina. The answer he says is as follows. You're not allowed to... Avoda has to be done standing, right? If you do avoda and you sit, you're a pasul. Bowing in the mikdash has to be done not standing, right? The way you bow, from what we do in Shul and Yom Kippur, is pishut yadayim v'raglayim. You have to spread out your hands and feet, right? You have to go down on all fours. So I know that avoda requires standing, and I know that if you bow, you're not doing avoda. So says the Rav, when it comes to Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol is engaged in avoda the entire time that he's in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It's not just the services in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It is the act of going to, entering, and leaving the Kodesh HaKadoshim is all one act of avoda. He can't bow because he is engaged in avoda, namely of entering the Kodesh HaKadoshim, being Kodesh HaKadoshim, leaving Kodesh HaKadoshim. That's the real avoda. And then he has the things that he's doing when he's in there. So that's going to be why you can't bow. Now, there are a few other proofs to this, and one is going to kind of highlight that this really applies specifically to the Ketores. Okay? We're going to say, really, just to say it out, is that the Ketores of Yom Kippur is... The Ketores of the year, we said, was about the raw act of burning, right? Regular karbanos, if you offer the karban, ketores is about the raw act of burning. The Rav's going to argue that ketores really is something totally else entirely. The focal avoda is entering the Kodesh HaKadoshim, being in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and leaving. Ketores is there so that you are exposed to the Ribono Shalom, right? Ki be'anan era lakaporas. As a reaction to that exposure, you are supposed to offer ketores. So the primary focal point of this is why it's specifically germane to the Ketores, right? You go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, your goal is to be Lifnei Hashem. When that happens, as an expression of your reaction, you are supposed to offer Ketores. And then after that's done, you're going to leave, right? So the Ketores, it's not that you're going in to offer the Ketores. The Ketores really is part of the broader avoda of going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Right, so it's like the opposite of focusing on the act of the avoda itself, right? Even narrower than offering the karban, it's just the raw act. Here for Ketores of Yom Kippur, we're saying that it's wrapped up in the broader avoda of going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. A couple of proofs that he gives in the article for us to chew on, and one which he doesn't, but we need to say because it is germane to specifically the Ketores. So probably the easier proof is there's a halacha which is in the Pesukim Menachem Mos. Nobody's allowed to be in the Kodesh HaKadoshim along. Nobody can be in the Hol Heichal when the Kohen Gadol goes in, right? V'chol adam lo yeh be'al moed when Kohen Gadol goes in. So that's a general rule which applies whenever a Kohen goes to do avoda in the Heichal. If a Kohen goes to do avoda in the Heichal, he must be by himself. So when Kohen goes in to set up the menorah, he has to be solo. When a Kohen goes in to light the Ketores, he has to be solo. Okay. The Mishnayos and Tamid, the same ones which talked all about the bowing, said, here's how the Ketores works, right? Ketores is offered by... You only get to offer Ketores once because you're supposed to... There's a skula to get wealthy when you offer Ketores. Right, so it was an extremely high demand of Oda. So every person who's offering the Ketores basically is a rookie. So he has no idea what he's doing in there, right? So you have the veteran Kohen who stands next to him telling him, here's exactly what you're going to do. And you have his friends who come, it's a very exciting day if you get to bring the Ketores. So your friends who come in bringing the Kalim, another friend brings in the coals. You have like this whole crew which comes in with you to offer the Ketores, And then the Mishnah says, when it's time to actually burn it, send everybody else leaves, and then the Kohen does the avoda of the Ketores burning. Right? So if all the other avoda, that's done in the Heichal, he has to be by himself, but it's only he only has to be himself from the moment that he's going to do the avoda itself. Okay? When it comes to the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, he has to be by himself, this is explicit in the Gemara, he has to be by himself from when he enters the Kodesh until he leaves. Right? It's not, you know, his chevra can't walk in with him, and then once he enters the Kodesh HaKadashim to do the Ketores, then they'll walk out. No. Once he walks in, he must be by himself. So the Rav asks, why should that be the case, right? All the other avodah in Heichal, he only has to be by himself from the moment he's doing avodah. So why for Yom Kippur does he have to be by himself from the moment he walks in? So the answer again is going to be the same idea, right? That when the hava, the entrance to Kodesh HaKadashim, the entire process is part of the avoda of going to the Kodesh HaKadashim, right? Let me just get the pasuk for 1 second. Come back for a second. I'm sorry for this.
The entire act of going to the
Heichal,
or just the Kodesh
HaKadashim? The going to the Kodesh HaKadashim. When, at what point do we say he's going to the Kodesh HaKadashim? Once he enters the Heichal, right? He's entering the Heichal on his way to the Kodesh HaKadashim. That's why he's allowed in the Heichal, right? It's not a Bia Rekanes, he's not going with no purpose. He's going to the Kodesh HaKadashim, right? So the going in, being there, coming out is one big act of avoda. Therefore, he has to be by himself the entire way. Therefore, he can't bow down, right? Because that would be a hafsik. That would be sitting down, and he has to be standing in order to be doing avoda. Okay, that's proof number two. Proof number three, which is the best one, but it's also the most complicated one, and then we'll look at the fourth one, which is really important for Ketores. So, proof number three. We have a halacha called Chazaka Demeikar, right? Meaning... If whatever was the previous status, we assume is the current status, right? That's the law of chazaka. Does anybody know where chazaka comes from? Good guess, very close. It comes from tzaras. Actually, this is a fun fact, right? Where the world of tzaras is extremely halacha lamaisa. Because, right, you know why?
Yeah,
the Gemara.
I
don't know the Ram Sechem. Cash 22. You have Tzaras in a house, right? A house can become Tame. How do you know that house becomes Tame? Because the Kohen walks in and the Kohen declares it Tame, right? If the Kohen is not allowed to become Tame, so how can a Kohen walk in and declare a Tame? He's going to make himself Tame. What? Kohen walks into the house, right? And then the Torah says he leaves the house, and upon leaving the house, he declares the house Tame, right? So that's the biblically given procedure for how this is going to work, right? You walk in, you look at the stain, you take notes. Then you walk out, and after you walk out, right, the Kohen's allowed that delay, and then he announces it's tummy. So the Gemara asks, wait a second. He walked out of the house. That took about 15 seconds. Maybe in those 15 seconds, the nega shrank. Right? And if the nega shrank, then the house is no longer tummy. So how can the Kohen pronounce the house tummy if he doesn't know what the house currently looks like? So that's where we learn chazaka from. Right? The answer is, right, chazaka, you assume whatever the previous status was is the current status. So 15 seconds ago, right, the tzaras was, you know, a foot by a foot, right? So I have no right to assume otherwise 15 seconds later, and therefore the Kohen can say the house is Tame. So the Gemara asks, wait a second. If the only proof for chazaka is that the Kohen doesn't know what the size of the nega is 15 seconds later, so we could solve that, right? Very simple. Have the Kohen walk out of the house backwards, right? So he'll keep his eye on the nega the entire time, right? And then I'll walk out of the house and I'll say, okay, right? I was watching the Negah the whole time, and I can tell you factually that the Negah didn't shrink. So how can you prove Chazaka from the Kohen? Maybe the Kohen knew factually that the Negah was the same size because he walked out of the house backwards. So the Gemara says, no, you can't do that because how do you know that when the Torah has a legally mandated act of leaving, right, which this is, right, there's a halos to this leaving, because this is what the Kohen is allowed to do and mandated to do, required to do before making the house tameh. So when the Torah commands a yitziyah, which has a certain halos, how do you know that it can be done backwards, right? Maybe yitziyahs have to be done, right, formal exitings have to be done walking forwards. So the Gemara answers, I know a yitziyah which is done backwards, right? Namely, Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, right? Kohen Gadol leaves the Kodesh HaKadashim, he walks out backwards, right? And, you know, you don't turn your back on God, right? So Kohen Gadol walks out of the Kodesh HaKadashim backwards, so too yitziyah could be done from the house backwards. Okay, so then the Gemara goes on its merry way. But the Rav asks, how do we know that there's like a specific chalos to the yetziyah of the Kohen Gadol, right? He's just leaving the Kodesh HaKadosh. There's no significance to this leaving. The Kohen with the tzaras, right? So that's what Torah said. Torah said, you know, he's mandated to leave the house, right? And then after that leaving, that's when he's allowed to say that it's the house is tameh. There's no chalos to the leaving of the Kohen Gadol. He just leaves, right? He did the avoda. At the end of the avoda, you have to walk out. So why are we ascribing legal significance to the Kohen Gadol leaving, right? And furthermore, why is he walking backwards? He didn't say this. We could say, why is he walking backwards? What?
That's like yeah.
Or just a simple question. Like, why is the Kohen Gadol walking backwards when he leaves the Kodesh HaKadosh? Why not turn around and walk out?
Yeah,
you don't turn your back. You're just kavod, right? So this is, he needs to leave. It's kavod to walk backwards. So how can the Gemara ascribe this like legal formal significance, the leaving of the Kohen Gadol, and compare it to the leaving of the Kohen from the house, and say, ah, you can't have a halachic act of leaving, or you see, you can have a halachic act of a leaving that's done backwards. What halachic act of leaving is there? He's just leaving. So the answer is going to be the same point, right? Which is, no, it's not that you do the Ketores and then you leave. It's the whole process of entering and leaving the Kodesh HaKadashim, which is the Avoda, right? The Avoda is go into the Kodesh HaKadashim, be there, and walk out. That's the avoda. No people there the whole time, no bowing the whole time, and we can prove, right, statements about halachic status of leaving from this, because this isn't just a walking out, this is actually a formal yetziyah. It is part of the avoda of going into the Kodesh HaKadashim and leaving, being lefnai v'lefnim, and then coming out. And that's like his most rock-solid proof. The fourth, and this is the one which is really instructive for our purposes for Ketores. So this is the one, even though he doesn't really talk about it in the article, he does talk about it back in the Sefer of the Grizz. Important to know, in the Grizz is Chidushim on the Rambam, so there are a number of letters in the back, and there are, I think, three, which are written to the as responses to the Rav. You know, certain circles, they don't talk about this. In certain circles, they also don't talk about the fact that you can tell which letters are the ones which are written to the Rav, because those are the ones which start off with, I saw the Chidushei Torah of Yakiri, of my dear one, and he has these amazing Chidushim, blah, 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 and now let's talk about it. You know, the other letters are all like, okay, Kavotarasso, this person says this, and here's my response. So one of the ones he has in response to the Rav is where the Rav gives his explanation of the following phenomenon. The law in Kadshim is that after something has fulfilled its mitzvah, there's no longer me'ilah, right? Nasis mitzvasan. Once you've fulfilled the commandment of something, there no longer is me'ilah involved, right? So, for example, at what point are you? At what point is there no me'ilah on? Should I think of an example quickly? Okay, let's set this up now. Something fulfills its mitzvah, there's no longer me'ilah. So the rule of Ketores is that once the smoke begins to rise, we say nasis mitzvasan, right? So you don't have a problem of smelling the Ketores after the smoke begins to rise because its mitzvah is completed, its destiny is accomplished. There's no longer a me'ila problem, right? Which makes sense from what Rav Chaim was saying, because the mitzvah is just to ignite the Ketores, right? And so also, for example, if you light the Ketores and it flies off of the Mizbeach, you don't need to put it back on, because all you have to do is light it, and then you fulfill the mitzvah. There's no longer me'ila. As soon as the smoke begins to rise, which happens probably very, very quickly, right, you're good to go. With the Ketores of Yom Kippur, that's not the case. Ketores of Yom Kippur, there is me'ila until the entire Kodesh HaKadashim fills with smoke, right? Until Nismale Habayas Ashan, which is learned from the fact, that the Torah says, V'chisa anana Ketores es HaKaparos, right? We have to have smoke covering, right? So the Gemara says, the is that you need Nismale Habayas Ashan, you have to have smoke filling the entire Kodesh HaKadashim. Until that point, there is still Me'ila. So asks the Rav, what's the difference? Why do we say Nasis Mitzvasan for regular Ketores as soon as it's lit and the smoke begins to rise? But for the Ketores of the whole of Yom Kippur, it's not Nasis Mitzvasan, its destiny is not fulfilled until the smoke fills the entire room. What's going on? So suggests the Rav, it's because the Kiyum of the Ketores is not the burning. The real Kiyum of the Ketores is that you're supposed to be in front of God. As an expression of that, you light the Ketores, and then you're supposed to stand there, right? That's like the real pinnacle of the service, is when you are standing in front of the Aron, right, with your Ketores that you have just placed there, is right, when I see God, I react by offering Ketores, and then the smoke is slowly rising and filling the room, and you can imagine what, you know, like, hashkafically, what kind of statement that's making, right? The transcendent smoke, which is spreading and filling everything around, right? Until that point is accomplished, you are supposed to stand there, and your mitzvah has not yet been fulfilled until the room is filled with smoke. So this is totally divided from an act of burning or an act of smoke rising, right? Nasis Mitzvah is only accomplished when the room fills with smoke, because the real goal of the mitzvah, right, what's the destiny of the Ketores? The destiny is to get you, the Kohen Gadol, to be standing lifnei Hashem. That's the real avod of the Ketores, is being before God, and you are offering this Ketores as an expression, as a reaction to being before God. Okay, so that's the basic, right? So we're kind of left with like a radical discrepancy between the Ketores of the year versus the Ketores of Yom Kippur, right? Ketores of the year. No, it's just an act of burning, it's incumbent upon the Kohanim, there's no machshava, that's post-sale, right? It's just the burning itself. Ketores of the year is part of the Ketores of Yom Kippur, is part of the broader framework of entering the Kodesh HaKadashim, right? And the avoda incumbent there, right? The fact that you can't bow because you're in the middle of going into the Kodesh HaKadashim, the fact that you can't have anybody there the entire time, because the entire time is going into Kodesh HaKadashim, we're coming out, that avoda of via Vietzia, what was the third one? Vietzia has halachic significance, and therefore it can't be, we can prove from the fact that it's done walking backwards, that a backwards Vietzia is a real halachic act of Vietzia. And finally, what's important for us, the Ketores, right, you're supposed to, the destiny, the mitzvah is not fulfilled until the smoke fills the whole room. Why? Because you're supposed to be standing in front of God, and that's your, that's, the Ketores there is your expression to being there. So, last thing is that it would be a little bit surprising to say that the Ketores of Yom Kippur and the Ketores of the year have, like, nothing to do with each other, right? Like, the whole purpose of, you know, of the, why was Ketores chosen, right? Because Ketores is the holiest of the Karbanos. The Ketores is the only one that's brought all year inside the Kodesh, right? What Karban during the year is brought inside the Kodesh? Only the Ketores, right? Ketores is the holiest of the Karbanos. So it would make sense that the Ketores is, that's what Korach and his team are all obsessed with, and Nadav Avihu into the Ketores. The Ketores is the Yom Kippur service. It's very hard to say that the Ketores of Yom Kippur is totally divided, nothing at all in common with the Ketores of the rest of the year. Right? They're drawing on some common root. So that's just why I wanted you to see this this Sfarno at the very end of Parshas Tetzaveh, because the Sfarno kind of takes what the Rav said about Ketores of Yom Kippur and he applies it a little bit to Ketores of the whole year. Because this is the question that all the Mefarshim ask, is that the Parshat Truma talks about all the Kalim of the Mishkan, right? And then Parsha Tzav, we talk about the big day kahuna, and we talk about this, 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 and that. And then right at the end of Tzav, like before you move on to Kisisa, we say, oh, by the way, there was one kli that we forgot about, and that was the Mizbeach HaZav. Right? So let's talk about the Mizbeach HaZav, the Mizbeach HaKatoras, and we'll mention that at the very end. So all the Mefarshim ask, like, why on earth is Mizbeach HaZav being left for the very end, after we talked about everything else in the Mishkan, and like we left Kalim behind, like three prakam earlier. What's going on? So Sarno explains that, I may be like expanding on this a little bit, but what Sarno says is that you can't, the Ketores is there when as a reaction to the Shekhinah. You have your Mishkan, you have your Shekhinah, and then once that's been accomplished, so now we set up Mizbeach HaZav and offer Ketores, because the Ketores is what you're supposed to bring when you are facing the Shekhinah, right? So that's why it's saved for the very end, because Ketores generally is there as an expression of, oh, every day, right, we see the Shekhinah, we're going to light Ketores. That's our response to the Hashras HaShekhinah. So if that's true, then what we have is the underlying theme of Ketores of the year, right, which is, you know, this is our daily offering in the Heichal, right, as a reaction to the fact that we have the Shekhinah, the Kodesh HaKadoshim next door, right? So then that's just being magnified 10 times on Yom Kippur, right? Where now it's not just that the reason for the Ketores is reacting to being in front of God, but it's that we go in front of God and walk in there so that we can offer this Ketores, right? It becomes like the whole avoda of the Ketores rather than just the underlying reason for it. We now go in there so that we can, you know, be face to face, and as an expression of being literally face to face, right? Not just in the Kodesh, but in the Kodesh HaKadashim, is where we will offer the unique Ketores of Yom Kippur, right? So in terms of avoda, they have discrepancies. In terms of ultimate purpose, they seem to have a common theme, all of being lifnai v'lifnim in front of the Shekhinah. Okay. So next, I'll send sources soon on Chafina, and if stuff is a problem, let me know. And